You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making this part of your daily routine, or this week, sort of daily. We took a day off after the season ended because, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. We are the Rain and Jays, the original Rain and Jays. J. King, John Corrales, we haven't done this together in a while, man.
Yeah, the playoff schedule is crazy, man.
It's been a little nuts. Yeah. I mean, I love doing the post games with Sam, but this is like the OG crew, me and you. Jay King, of course, writes for The Athletic, and you can follow him on Twitter at @byjking. If you're new to the show, I am John Corrales. You can follow me at @RedsArmy_John. I'm on RedsArmy.com, and every once in a while, you'll find my stuff on Boston.com, like today. And we're going to talk about all of that stuff today. Celtics have a bunch of good problems, as Jay King's latest piece says, and we're going to be positive about the future of the Celtics, and even after a Game 7 that they could have won. We'll talk about Marcus Smart's impending free agency, and then we bash stupid people on Twitter.
That's always my favorite segment of the show.
We need to come up with like some open music or something like that. But let's start with this. Let's reflect a little bit. We've had a couple of days. Season ended on Sunday. We're recording this on Tuesday for the Wednesday podcast. Everybody now has, I think, just digested, even though Game 7 was winnable, it was a situation where, even though the home road disparity was what it was, I think the difference was, in a Game 7 pressure situation, a veteran player actually stepped up, and two very young guys, I think, might have gotten, let the moment get to them a little bit, in Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown. So, but moving forward, those guys are very key pieces to what should be, providing everybody comes back healthy, a very deep team. And the biggest problem, Jay, is, you know, getting everybody the proper minutes and getting everybody the proper touches, if I could speak.
I think the touches thing might be more important than the minutes thing, because the Celtics have, for all like the wings that they have, all those guys can play together. The plan this year was for Gordon Hayward to run point guard with the second unit. Like, they're going to be able to play Hayward and Brown and Tatum and Marcus Morris if he returns. And they're going to be able to play so many different types of lineups with those guys because they're all so interchangeable and because they can all do so many things. So I think the bigger thing might be the touches and the shine. Like, Jason Tatum just finished one of the best rookie postseasons in NBA history. And he's going to be probably a lot better in year two once he gets a little stronger with a little more experience. And Jaylen Brown was almost just as good in the postseason as Tatum for most of the postseason. So he's going to want more shine. And then obviously Kyrie and Hayward are going to come back. So Brad Stevens is going to have to, I don't know if he's going to have to massage egos a little bit, but the team just has so much talent. Even Rozier is going to come off the bench. He just averaged 16, 5, and 5 for a team that got within one game of the NBA Finals. So, and he's going to come off the bench. He could be like the sixth or seventh man. So there's going to be a lot of guys who deserve the ball. And it's the best problem to have, but I am interested to see how the team dynamic works out next year.
Sure, yeah. I mean, look, like you said, the plan was for Gordon Hayward to come in and basically run the backup point, because at the beginning of the year we said, you got Kyrie, you got Smart who can run the backup point, but is he better off the ball? And if he's off the ball, then who handles the ball? And Terry Rozier wasn't in the discussion. I don't know where he fits. That he's definitely a question mark. He's not necessarily your backup point guard because Smart exists theoretically. We'll get to Smart in a little bit. But and I do think that there's going to be some level of Gordon Hayward handling the ball because you're going to want a lineup where Hayward, Tatum, Brown are on the floor, and maybe you go with Al Horford and a big, be it Aaron Baines or somebody else, however that plays out. But if they want to go big, that's going to be a lineup that they're going to want to use. So where Terry Rozier fits, and maybe he fits off the ball a little bit more sometimes, who knows. But that's definitely a question mark. There's definitely going to be some question to that. I think part of the answer next year is going to be an increase in pace. Brad Stevens has come into the past two seasons. I remember both preseasons he said, we want to be flying around. And neither season were they really flying around. I think that's ultimately his goal, is to play more up-tempo, more Warriors-type basketball and really push. They'll have the personnel next year to kind of do that. And if you can get 10 more shots per game and get it up into the low 90s, somewhere in that range, you can get everybody a couple more shots and they'll be a little bit happier. So, but yeah, that is going to be a very interesting question. What happens? Where does Marcus Morris fit? Where does Aaron Baines, does he come back? What kind of contract would he get somewhere else? Does Aaron Baines' shooting make him more valuable to the Celtics now all of a sudden? There's a lot of questions. And I can't believe that when we look back on this postseason, Aaron Baines' shooting was a huge part of it. That he was part of the reason why that Philly series ended in five. Like, who saw that coming?
Yeah, that one was a wild one. When you make more three-pointers in a single postseason than you have the rest of your career by, like, tenfold, then you've surprised some people. Yeah. And I do want to point out, like, we're talking about all these good problems. Kyrie is just what the Celtics needed. They needed someone throughout the postseason, even though they were so great. They needed someone who could kill ISOs. And they needed someone to free the pressure on Al Horford. And they needed someone to deliver the ball to the younger guys and put them in more efficient situations. And Gordon Hayward, like, I think a lot of Boston fans know that he's really good. I don't know if everyone realizes just how damn good and versatile he is. And, like, he's going to be the Celtics. He's going to be one of their top two, probably, playmakers. He is one of the best off-ball players in the league, like just a supreme cutter. He's a freak athlete, 6'8", super versatile. Like, he's going to fit in perfectly with these guys. And so as much as I say, like, there are going to be good problems, I also think those guys are really, really good fits for the current team. And that's part of what makes it so exciting for the Celtics, is that they're getting back two all-stars who fit in perfectly with what they're trying to do and the team that they want to be.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Celtics offseason moves are already done with adding Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward to a team that got to Game 7 of the conference finals. I'm excited about Gordon Hayward, not just because of the player that he was. In a weird way, the injury has helped him actually improve an aspect of his game, it seems, because every time you see some of the things that he's talking about, he talks about his shooting, his shot, that he's improved how quick his release is, and his strength, because he's been able to shoot from three from further out without jumping. So he's actually talked about and written about, actually, increasing his range and improving his release. So on top of everything that Gordon Hayward has been through, this year off has allowed him to kind of perfect, fine-tune certain aspects of his game that he really wouldn't have had time to work on. So
you know what's better than shooting from a chair? Shooting in real life, man. Yeah. I'm not buying that the year off has like allowed him to fine-tune aspects of his game. I mean, sure.
We talked about it.
But he would have been much better off trying to fine-tune that while fully healthy.
No shit.
Like I'm not buying it.
You're not buying that someone who is forced to stand there from three can't improve his release, quickly his release is, and
sure, it's possible. I'm not as quick to buy that one as you are, I guess.
I think when you have that year, if you're looking for, it's obviously we want him playing. It would have been great to have him playing, but at the same time, having a year to work on one aspect of your game, it's the only thing he could work on is how can I get my release quicker? How can I speed that up? Like, that's just a little fine-tuned thing could be the difference between him not getting off shots and him getting off shots and getting off shots from further out. I think there's something to that. There's certain things in the course of an NBA season you're just not going to work on. You're not going to get a chance to work on. And tinkering with your shot, especially when you're at Gordon Hayward's age, that's not something you go into the summer really trying to work on. And now he had something. It's not like he's going to be radically different, but any little bit helps, and I think there's something to it.
All right.
God damn it, Jay King.
John's buying in, baby.
All right, so we're all in agreement that this is going to be great next season. It's going to be great. It should be great. I wouldn't be surprised, and I don't want to get too much into it now. I wouldn't be surprised if next season they get there's a little bit of a growing pain because you're trying to work out who takes shots and what. And it's going to be really interesting to see how they integrate with one another. But, man, just a guy who probably will finish third in Rookie of the Year, and a guy who for a long time in Jaylen Brown, people were talking about a potential most improved. He tailed off a little bit, but earlier in the season they were talking about him for a potential most improved candidate. Making that jump into year three for him is going to be huge. And to have Al Horford, who next year, I vow now not to get caught up in Al Horford debates next year, because I know Al Horford's numbers are going to drop next year. I think he's just not going to be shooting. It's not going to be an all-star season for him. He's going to happily take a step back with his own jumper, with his own scoring. He's going to be more of a facilitator and a screen setter, and he'll like lead the league in screen assists, and no one outside of us gives a shit about screen assists.
I'm not convinced his numbers will go down.
I'm anticipating that. I expect them to go down because I think he's just so – maybe they'll go down at first and pick up later, but I just anticipate him just taking such a step back and passing and setting screens for everybody else and just being willing to say, I'll be the guy that kind of gets everybody open and makes those passes.
I think he'll also be the recipient of other guys creating for him. I think that this year, if there was one of the Celtics' flaws throughout this postseason, I thought, was that they didn't get Horford the ball in the right positions all the time. And some of their ball handlers were a beat late getting the ball to him. Sometimes, like, the Cavs were so intent on keeping Horford out of things that they would double him, or they would, you know, have Tristan Thompson just stick with Horford no matter what was going on around him. You're not going to be able to do that anymore. Maybe his numbers won't go up, but his numbers, I think, will come easier than they did this season. And so he's the perfect all-star to have with a team loaded with all-star talent.
Totally.
Because he doesn't care. He doesn't care about his numbers. He doesn't care about a damn thing except winning. He doesn't care about credit. He doesn't care about any of it. He just wants to win. He just wants to help you win. And so I think he's going to have as much fun as anybody playing with those other guys.
No, I agree. I totally agree. And you're right. That is an element that I didn't really think about necessarily. But and there were plenty of times, and this was my main criticism of Rozier, which, you know, look, I don't want to get on Rozier too much. He had a fantastic season, a generally good postseason. The struggles notwithstanding, I thought he did very, very well for himself. But if I did have one criticism, is that he was routinely at least the second late, maybe a little bit more on a lot of the plays, especially for Al Horford. So you're right. There'll be a lot more opportunities on pick and rolls where defenses maybe overcommit or play it wrong, and he'll get alley-oops. He'll basically play the Clint Capella role on pick and rolls while being a much, much better player than Clint Capella. But that could be how he gets most of his points. But he's generally, I don't think, going to be much of a guy that's a focal point of the offense, I guess is more my point. So let's leave that there, because I think that's going to be a conversation that's going to carry us through a lot of the postseason, especially as we see more of Kyrie starting to get back out on the floor eventually. Hayward starting to get out there. At some point soon, you're going to start seeing Hayward posting workout videos again where he's actually kind of jogging and cutting. So
he's playing one-on-one now.
Is he?
He's playing one-on-one now.
So, see, if only we had gotten to the NBA Finals, I swear he would have been ready for a Game 7. before we continue the show, speaking of the NBA Finals, I want to remind everybody that the Locked On NBA podcast has gone daily, and after I'm done with this show, I'm going to go record the Locked On NBA podcast with my friend Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelican Show, and we're going to get into the NBA Finals. We'll be looking at the Finals from the Warriors' perspective, from the Cavs' perspective, and then we'll be looking, of course, at what the two teams that lost did, our own Boston Celtics and the Houston Rockets. So that'll be the Wednesday night show on Locked On NBA. So be sure to subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast. Everybody does a great job Monday through Friday. We do the Wednesday show, so that's coming up. Subscribe to that wherever you found Locked On Celtics. One element to the future of the Celtics and figures heavily into what Terry Rozier is going to be next year is Marcus Smart, who is a restricted free agent. So we just talked about a piece, and now the conversation that we just had is summed up nicely on The Athletic. If you don't remember, Jay King now writes for The Athletic, and The Athletic now covers Boston sports, so go subscribe to The Athletic, and you can find Jay King's latest piece, which is entitled "A Lot of Good Problems Lie Ahead as the Celtics Consider Their Roster." So go read that for a kind of a sum up of what our first segment was. Now, go to Boston.com and find my piece, which is 4 potential free agency outcomes for Marcus Smart. And we're going to talk about Marcus Smart's restricted free agency. Now, I think that of the 4 things I laid out, there is the signing a long-term deal with the Celtics, which would probably be maybe a little bit below market, I think. Taking the qualifying offer, going into free agency and fielding offers, or signing a short-term deal. Which of those scenarios, Jay, do you think is most likely? Or is there a fifth scenario that I didn't consider?
Restricted free agency always depends on the market, right?
Of course.
Like, restricted free agency can be weird in that sometimes teams are totally scared away because they think another team will match. But other times they're willing to like load up huge offers for a guy that they love because they need to do that to get the other team to decline it. So I don't know what the market will be like for Smart. He's such a weird player that it's tough to kind of anticipate what type of offers he'll get out there. I do think if a team loads up an offer sheet and really loads it up, then the Celtics will have a tough time keeping him. I think because of the way their luxury tax is set up for the future, like not right now, but years down the road, this team is going to be silly expensive. Like to keep around all these guys they're going to have to pay some of the biggest luxury tax payouts in NBA history. And I don't know how willing the Celtics owners are going to be, even though Danny Ainge stresses that they're willing to pay for a winner, and even though they stress that they're willing to pay for a winner. Like, at some point, they're going to have to let guys go or try to roll guys forward for younger, cheaper talent, because the money is just going to get out of hand to keep this core together. So the smart thing, it's a little bit unpredictable, I think. I would be surprised if he gets a huge offer sheet. I wouldn't be shocked at all if the Celtics are able to get him on a more reasonable contract. And if they do, then the Terry Rozier situation becomes a thing. Do they trade him? Do they keep him around with Smart and try to go for a title with everybody back? What's their plan there? And I think for a lot of monetary reasons, especially the Smart Rozier situation is going to be interesting this summer.
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, they could certainly go into next season with both of those guys on the team. I don't think it goes beyond next season, because then the season after that is when Rozier is a restricted free agent. And that is going to be a little bit tough. At that same time, Tice is going to be a restricted free agent, and they won't have a full roster. They're going to have to spend a lot of money to fill that out. That's also going to be the Al Horford player option year. That's also going to be the Kyrie Irving player option year. Al Horford due $30 million in two seasons. He'll almost certainly opt into that, while Kyrie Irving will almost certainly opt out of $21 million in the summer of 2019. So he'll be due some sort of extension then, whatever that is.
Although the Horford thing, I'm not sure that's a certainty.
You don't think he opts into $30 million in 2 years?
Let's say he has another year that's just some of the best basketball of his career. Maybe opt out, try to cash in on one longer contract, one last long-term contract. You know, like, he's getting up there. So we'll see.
I don't know. I think that $30 million payday, if he opts out, what's he going to get? Is he going to get $20 million for three more? Is he going to make $60 million?
He could get, like, 30 per for 3 years, maybe.
I would be shocked.
If he has another year like he did this year, if he continues to look like he's going to age super gracefully, I mean, it wouldn't be the craziest thing.
Maybe. I would be shocked. I would be surprised at that, because I just don't see – I don't see a team paying that much money. At this point, he'll be 30 – he's turning 32 soon, in like a week. So by that time, 34 – three more years of Al Horford at that kind of money – I just don't see it. I mean, he'll age well. I think he's got the game to age well. I just don't see him opting out and getting that long-term a deal. Who knows? Who knows? But we'll see. I anticipate him opting into $30 million at that point. But regardless, let's go back to Marcus Smart. That's another conversation for another day. I think the one thing we have to anticipate here, let's explain to people who aren't quite up to speed the tax situation real quick. Like, right now, the Celtics are going to pay next year they're not really at the tax. I think next year, Danny Ainge has said the team will pay a tax for a team that they think can win it. At the same time, I don't know if they're going to want to dive into that repeater any earlier than they have to. If they can go into next season and keep Marcus Smart at a rate that keeps them out of the luxury tax, that pushes the repeater tax off a little bit. Now, the difference between the repeater and the non-repeater is basically a dollar for every $1 million. No, let me rephrase that. It's the rate for a non-repeater is $1.50 per every dollar that you spend for the first $5 million, you are over the tax. The repeater rate is $2.50. It's an extra dollar per dollar you spend. Now that adds up. I'm not going to do all the math. It's stupid. It's going to get boring. Bottom line is, you get into that repeater tax if you're paying the tax 3 years. And the Celtics, while they're willing to pay a tax, why would they want to spend that stupid money like you're talking about any sooner than they have to? So I think next year, if they can get Marcus Smart at a rate that keeps them under the tax, then they're going to do it. The market for Marcus Smart, I don't think it's there. There are not that many teams with cap space. There are a ton of point guards that are out there. There are guards out there that can do a decent job, and there are fewer wings out there that can do what people want them to do in today's NBA. So I think teams are less likely to spend on guards. On top of that, if the Celtics put out the word that they're willing to match reasonable offers, who's going to tie up their cap and do a poison pill contract and give Marcus Smart some kind of like crazy $20 million in the third year just to pry him away from the Celtics? I don't know that a team's going to do that. I also think it's kind of silly for Marcus Smart to sign the qualifying offer and play for $6 million next year. I don't think he has to do that. I think if he signs for 2 years at like $20 to $24, $25 million, you get him at somewhere around $12, $12.5 million per year. That's enough to stay under the tax. Then the following year, doesn't matter. That's going to be a tax-paying year anyway. It doesn't matter. You get him for 2 years while you still have Hayward, Horford, and Irving, all those guys, all three of them under contract for the next 2 years. So you basically run with this core for those 2 years. And then after that, in 2020, Smart would be a free agent. Horford is a free agent. You can decide what you want to do with that. And then depending on what they do with Kyrie Irving, if he signs the extension or if he decides to go into free agency, I don't know what happens there. But all of those guys expire at the same time, and you can kind of figure it out from there. I think that makes the most sense from a team-building aspect, from a Marcus Smart aspect. In 2 years, all of those stupid 2016 contracts, the Mozgovs, the Dangs, Evan Turner, those contracts, those all expire, so teams aren't as hamstrung. There's money to spend. I think from a player perspective, finding a market in an NBA that's got money to spend, and from a team perspective, tax-paying team, salary building, getting that cap sheet clean at the same time, I think it just makes sense all the way around to do a 2-year deal with him.
All right. 2 years. I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. There's just so many factors that can go into it, and
okay.
We will see. I mean, it's that one's hard to predict for me. Like, no matter how many people you talk to, nobody really has any idea about what will happen there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so I've made my case. We'll go with that. Let's turn our attention to Twitter and the ever popular Chris Palmer, who today tweeted out a thing about Tyronn Lue and Brad Stevens and their coaching record. And basically saying Tyronn Lue, first of all, he tweeted out that if Ty Lue had Smart and Rozier and Tatum and Brown and Horford, that they would be fitting themselves for rings. He basically is making the case that Tyronn Lue is a better coach than Chris Palmer. I mean, better coach than Chris Palmer for sure, than Brad Stevens. And then he listed out their career winning percentage. Ty Lue, 62.4. Brad Stevens, 53.9. Playoff winning percentage, that Lue is a high percentage. Three NBA Finals appearances for Lue, one ring. And then he says, but Stevens is the young coaching mind being compared to Wooden. Sorry. And also Lue is younger than Stevens. I've not seen a dumber, more out of context take than this. And I spent a little bit of time firing back at him showing that Brad Stevens, out of the two, has been increasing his winning percentage over the years rather than having it decrease like Tyronn Lue did. Since Tyronn Lue took over the Cavaliers, in the same amount of games, Brad Stevens has a better coaching record, even though that LeBron and Kyrie Irving were in Ty Lue's starting lineup in his first game, and Brad Stevens' first game started like Vitor Favorani. So, I don't know. There's a lot of shit going out there. The people are really, really trying to discredit Brad Stevens because out of jealousy or whatever, that they just don't want to give the guy credit. Maybe they feel like he's getting too much credit. I think the whole thing has just been so stupid.
So, his tweets cracked me up. Chris Palmer, he really had some hot takes.
The hottest takes.
Yes, the hottest takes. Basically saying, like, the Celtics had an automatic Eastern Conference champion with their roster, even without Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, which is wild. Like, how many times has a team had a 20-year-old, 21-year-old in the starting lineup and gotten within one win of the finals? I think it's probably never.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think you have to rip Brad Stevens to give Ty Lue credit. And I will say this. Ty Lue will never get the credit as a coach that he deserves. That's part of coaching LeBron James. That's just how it goes. When you're with LeBron James, the credit's going to go to him. The blame is often going to go elsewhere because LeBron James is just a force. And everyone knows that. And so I think to an extent, Chris Palmer was probably upset, and now I'm projecting onto him. but he's probably upset that Ty Lue hasn't gotten the credit he deserved for what really, like, he's been great. He's been a great coach. He's done a lot. And he's probably just upset about that. I don't, like, Stevens did an unbelievable coaching job this year. That's just, that's the most obvious thing in the world. And he lost two of his best players. He was relying on a supremely young roster, and he almost got to the NBA Finals. If guys had hit wide-open shots, he would probably be coaching in the Finals Thursday night. So it just doesn't make sense to me. One thing I do want to share, though, which I thought was kind of cool, because Ty Lue has been through a lot this season. During the postseason celebration, the post game seven celebration, and I'm sure Celtics fans don't want to hear much about this, but this is a cool moment. All the players were, you know, going wild, super excited. It was the most contested Eastern Conference series that they've had since LeBron returned, and they were really excited to win it. And Ty Lue was off to the side, like, just super, super emotional. And you could tell, like, that series win and getting to the finals again just meant so much to him. And to the point where, like, Kendrick Perkins went over and gave him a big hug, and Kevin Love went over and gave him a big hug. But I just thought that was a cool moment, that it's not all about titles. Sometimes, like, just winning a series like that can be incredibly emotional. So I thought that was a cool moment. So shout out to Ty Lue for that. Shout out to the Cavaliers for, really, I mean, it was a great, great win by them. I didn't think they had it in them once Kevin Love went down. I certainly didn't think Jeff Green would be as effective as he was. And LeBron was just a beast. LeBron was unbelievable. But yeah, so back to Chris Palmer. Just leave the crazy tweets to yourself, man. He has a long history of hot takes on Twitter. That was among the hottest, though, I think.
That really was. Although I enjoyed, you know, the opportunity to look up some of the coaching statistics and throw those back out there and whatever. Like, fine. Ty Lue probably doesn't get enough credit. But Ty Lue also said that he didn't play Kyle Korver because Semi Ojeleye wasn't in the game. Like, so some of that's brought upon himself. whatever, that's fine. I understand. I understand that there is a backlash against Brad Stevens because people will throw it out there like he hasn't won anything yet. Okay, what should he have won by now? When you walk in and Jordan Crawford is your sixth man, like right away, like this team has had such turnover over the course of his career, and still each year they get better and better and better. And this year would be, I think, the year that people say, all right, I kind of get it. Because not only did they lose Kyrie, not only did they lose Gordon Hayward, they brought back four guys from the previous year, and they still got better. They had a better record on top of everything, and they still did better in the playoffs. It's unbelievable that people won't give him the proper credit, but I guess sometimes people feel like he's getting too much. Whatever. Once they go off and win the next three championships in a row, then people maybe will.
Ooh, Corrales. the declaration.
Oh, let's leave it at that, huh? Predicting three straight championships. Why not?
Seems like a good way to end it off.
Let's end that show right there. If you are not a subscriber, we hope you do subscribe by searching for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcast. If you are a subscriber, we would love that 5-star rating and a good review to push us up the rankings. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to let you say your line. If you're not a subscriber,
you're stupid.
We just got to get you stupid shirts for the podcast. I'm sitting here trying to come up with logos, and we just got to write the words "you stupid" on the thing, and just that's it. Sell like hotcakes.
That's it. But if anyone wants to make us a dope logo, and is a designer out there for logos for free, by the way, I might add, free of
charge.
This
is why I'm trying to make the logo, because I'm working on it. But if somebody wants to throw one our way, that's fine too.
Yeah, it'll be dope.
That's it. That's the show, everybody. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales. Locked On Celtics.